This is The End User, episode 146 for Thursday, September 12th. A human-computer laser rocket space interface. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Marr. Now, Chris, it is a great week for futurism and futurists everywhere, especially the ones that love Apple. Apple is bringing the tech this week. As we mentioned last week, on September 10th, they had an event at their campus and launched not one, but two new iPhones. So we've got, as many people have been predicting, the iPhone 5C, which comes in five different plastic colors, and the iPhone 5S, which comes in the same white and silver or slate gray as the iPhone 5, and a new gold and white color.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting, right? They're not just coming out with the new 5S and taking the old device and making it cheaper. They're actually coming out with two new models. They said, we're replacing the old iPhone with this new, cheaper iPhone. So I think the 5C is actually a pretty good-looking device for the price.
Yeah, I think it's great. So the 5C is going to start at $100. $99 on a two-year contract for a 16-gigabyte model, and then the 32-gigabyte model will be $199. So this is the same scheme that they've been doing when they release a new phone. This is basically taking the place of the iPhone 5, whereas the iPhone 5S is their new flagship phone, and that's going to be $199 with a two-year contract for 16 gigabytes and an extra $100 for 32 gigabytes and then 64 gigabytes.
And it's kind of interesting. You know, we've talked about this a little bit on the show before, but the smartphone market has matured in a way in the past, I don't know, 2 years or something like that, in that even the old chips and the old devices are pretty darn good now. We're getting to a place where the older models are actually pretty good, and the older chip in the 5C can still do pretty well. Although, you know, we'll talk about what the upgrades are in the 5S a little bit later. But the 5C also has a bunch of color options, which I thought is kind of interesting. They're going like they did with the iPod here.
Yeah, that's right. So the iPhone 5C is basically the same internal parts as an iPhone 5, right, but with this new plastic case, which comes in blue, green, yellow, pink, and white. Although you don't have an option for a white front panel. The front panels are all going to come in black. But they have made a couple of internal improvements. One is they made the battery slightly bigger, and another is that they have improved the wireless capabilities. It now has more wireless bands than any other phone on the market for LTE.
So what do you think about the plastic back? And I guess I shouldn't call it plastic. I should call it polycarbonate, right? That's that's how Apple always approached their old MacBooks as well.
Right. So I would be comfortable calling it plastic. Polycarbonate is just a fancy word for plastic for the most part. But it is plastic done very well. They took a very serious approach to its design and its manufacture. And it's covered with a nice lacquer coat. I think it looks pretty nice. I'm confused by the color choices, but they are certainly very pretty.
I have seen in watching the kind of news reaction to what the 5C is, I've noticed that you know, a lot of people are coming out and saying that the plastic iPhone is actually pretty good. And then, of course, the inevitable response is, I thought you said plastic phones were bad. You ditched the Samsung devices. But I think you're right. I think this plastic back on this 5C is actually a plastic phone done right. I think it looks pretty nice. They made a big deal about how they put this plastic around it, but the, you know, there's no like little gaps. There's no you know, battery cover that you have to pry off or anything quite like that. So I think they did do it right here.
And, I mean, it's obvious that they still don't think of this plastic or polycarbonate as their premium flagship.
Right, it's cheaper.
Material, right? The iPhone 5S is still the same aluminum design as the original iPhone 5. It's definitely cheaper, and I think that plays into a big part of why they're doing this. But I have a more comprehensive theory as to why they've gone with plastic for the 5C and aluminum for the 5S, and it has to do with those finely diamond chamfered edges on the iPhone 5 and 5S. We talked about it a bit last year. I'll see if I can pull up the link for the show notes. But when Foxconn started to put together these iPhone 5s more than a year ago, they had to buy these special diamond chamfering machines, which cost over $1 million a piece from, I think it was a Japanese company. And they basically bought out their entire supply for the next year or so, so they could keep producing iPhone 5s. Now, the iPhone 5S is a bigger product launch than the iPhone 5. So it's launching in more countries. Most notably, China is going to have it on more of their carriers and sooner. So a lot of people are going to be going out and buying that iPhone 5S. And I think that they simply do not have the capacity to make an iPhone 5 and an iPhone 5S and fill all the orders that they need to.
Oh,
just the machines don't exist in the world to make that many diamond chamfered aluminum, precision milled aluminum cases.
Yeah, that's a pretty good theory. And not even to mention that the smartphone market is still growing rapidly, let alone a large product launch like this. But whatever iPhone comes out is probably going to be the best selling iPhone ever, right? Just because
right.
of the nature of the growing market.
That's how it's been happening, yeah, especially with their forays into the Chinese market, and as well as they are launching on Japan's biggest wireless network, NTT Domico.
So before we get into the 5S, who's the target for 5C? Who would walk up to you and say, you know, I want to get an iPhone, I don't know which one to get. When would you recommend the 5C, I guess?
I have been telling a lot of people, family members, friends, certain clients, that the iPhone 5C is going to be a pretty great device for anybody who is not looking to hang on to it for more than their two-year contract, right? If they're planning to upgrade again in 2 years, the 5C is going to be great for at least that long. Furthermore, anybody who's not particularly insistent on having the latest technology, and before we talk about that, we should really talk about the new tech in the iPhone 5S.
Right. Now, well, let's mention one more thing about the 5C. There's a bunch of cases that they've made available that kind of accent the color of the back of the phone.
Ah, yes. Apple's going back into the case market, which they started off disastrously with their bumper for the iPhone 4. I'm not a big fan of these cases. They're pretty enough, sure. It's nice that they complement the colors, but I think you're better off going with a third party for a case.
Yeah, that's probably true. There's so many case manufacturers out there. I think depending on what your needs are, you can just get a better price on one than for the first-party $30 iPhone case. There's just too many competitors out there for that to be a competitive price. But they are kind of novel, you know, with the polka dots and stuff. That's kind of a novel take on a case that I hadn't really seen before.
Yeah, it's nice enough. I would go so far as to say that the iPhone 5C probably doesn't even really need a case.
Yeah, because that plastic back kind of is a case, right? Although I guess it doesn't protect the screen at all, but...
Well, presumably the screen can be replaced just as easily as it was with any other model iPhone.
Yeah, you have to go to a hardware shop to get it replaced, but it's not too expensive to do that, I don't think, anymore.
Well, that remains to be seen, and it's all about the parts market.
So I think Mr. C. Ward there in the chat room hit it right on the head. the market is for families who give their seven-year-olds iPhones. And that's, in fact, what the C stands for. It's the iPhone 5 Children Edition.
Children, right. Well, I'm certain that there are going to be a lot of parents who go out and buy the iPhone 5C for their children, but hopefully not for seven-year-olds. I think a seven-year-old is probably going to be okay with an older disposable iPhone or perhaps an iPod Touch.
Yeah, probably more like an iPod Touch. You're right.
All right, so let's get to the big news, the flagship phone, right? The iPhone 5S. So the irony here is that the iPhone 5C is essentially all of the guts of an iPhone 5 put into a plastic case, whereas the iPhone 5S is a lot of new components put into exactly the same case as the iPhone 5.
Yeah, so this is their flagship device. It's
right.
This is the replacement. And, you know, they've tweaked it a little bit. I kind of like the new colors. The space gray looks pretty cool. And they've got some minor improvements in the chip. But it's still the same kind of design, you know. They're on this cycle where they have the S, which is the improvement of the previous one. So next year, the iPhone that's going to come out is going to be a huge change, I'd have to imagine. But this is a more iterative change. But I think they've done some good things here.
Right. The most noticeable one, and the one that most people are talking about, is they've changed the home button. It no longer looks like the little square within a circle that you've seen on every iPhone and every iPad and every iPod Touch since they started making them. Now it is a blank circle with a steel band around the rim of it, and that is because they put a fingerprint sensor inside it.
Yeah, this is the one thing that I think they kind of got wrong. I don't think that a fingerprint scanner is a good way to authenticate you to something, whether it's a website or a phone or some kind of device. I don't think a fingerprint is the optimum way to authenticate somebody.
Okay, but isn't a fingerprint a better way to authenticate than just a PIN code on your screen?
Sure. So it's better than nothing. That's certainly true. But the very fact that you cannot reset your fingerprints means that you're bound for trouble sometime in the future. So, you know, if your password or PIN code gets leaked out there somehow, then you can just reset it, and that's fine. But if all you're relying upon is your fingerprint, if that gets out there in a way that can be replicated, then you're really in trouble because you just can't reset it. So,
Why are you saying that your fingerprint's going to get out there? How does the fingerprint get out there?
Well, because that's how information on the internet works, right? You digitize something and it is inherently at risk of getting out there. So I have to presume, and we don't have details about this, but I have to presume that it saves the image of your fingerprint locally on the device, and it doesn't upload it anywhere. So Apple's not storing a database of fingerprints or anything. But if in any authentication system, part of the design has to be a reset mechanism, and that is just fundamentally not possible with a fingerprint. So what is kind of nice about it is as a secondary authentication mechanism. So if you have a PIN code and a fingerprint, then you're probably a little better off than just having a PIN code. But it also negates the convenience of having a fingerprint reader on the front of the device. So ultimately that
okay, well, two-factor authentication always negates convenience necessarily.
Right. Exactly.
But it remains to be seen whether Apple has implemented fingerprint scanning plus a PIN code, but I'm sure that they will get there at some point, either in iOS 7 or in iOS 8. And they may, in fact, have it at launch.
Right. So in that light, I think that is a good thing. But saying that there's a bunch of hyperbole out there, and you may have heard some of this, but saying that passwords are over now that we have fingerprint readers is just simply untrue. It's not something you can rely upon.
But Apple never said that. Apple is just introducing this. First of all, I would agree with you if you had just said this is new technology for new technology's sake. They never would have put this in there if they had other interesting additions to make to the phone. But Apple was never touting this as a replacement for passwords. They never said that. And I really think of this as a secondary authentication method. And I think that they're doing it properly. It's secure. It's not likely to get leaked. They don't store images of your fingerprints on the phone. They don't store any fingerprint data outside of the secure part of the system itself within the phone.
Yeah, it just seems to be some of the popular opinion out there. So I'm not saying Apple said that this was the case, but I just wanted to address that some of the popular opinion out there is just not correct. And you have to think about this as a second factor, not as your single, or that is, if you care about security, which a lot of people don't, and they don't even put pins on their phones, but if you do care about security, you better not set this as your sole method of authentication with the phone. That's all.
Very good point, Chris. But what you said to begin with is that you don't think Apple is implementing this correctly. Do you want to stand by that, or are you just saying that is the general feeling that the internet is taking on this, that people are making too big a deal out of it?
Yeah, I think people are making too big a deal out of it on both ends, actually. So calling it completely useless is kind of over the top. But the using it as your sole authentication method, is useless.
All right. Well, so, I would agree that both ends, both the internet and Apple are making too big a deal out of this. But to be fair, Apple makes a really big deal out of everything.
Everything.
Changes that they made for the iPhone 5S is the camera. They've improved the camera a little bit by taking the same space for the camera and slightly enlarging the sensor area to take their megapixel sensor from 1.2 microns per pixel to 1.5 microns per pixel. And they said that this would make all the difference in all of your photos, which it won't. And then, furthermore, they added a second LED, and they said this would make all the difference in your photos, which it won't, because it's just two LED flashes instead of one. Now, to be fair, they put a lot of engineering work into this second LED. What they've done is created a fluorescent high-contrast LED and added another one that is supposed to aid creating natural skin tones in low-lit photos. And they made it so that the camera first takes a scan of the light levels and then matches their LED combinations from one of 1,000 different combinations to match the skin tone for the lighting levels at that particular area. And they've made a few other enhancements to the cameras as well. But my point is, they improved the camera, one. And two, they made a way big deal out of it, much more than they should have. But that's what Apple does.
Yeah, and they kind of took a knock at Nokia during the press event, where they're saying, you know, this camera takes better pictures, not just bigger pictures.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear them say that more megapixels is not everything. They seem to be comfortable with just sticking with 8 megapixels and then improving the camera with that. It's not necessarily the end-all, be-all. Nokia has made a lot of other advancements in camera performance. It's not all about the megapixels for them either. I think that they were taking a knock at the general trend in the smartphone market towards more megapixels. And you have to admit, in many cases, that is a high-quality picture at a decent megapixel rate.
So the interesting part about the 41 megapixel camera on the Lumia 1020 is that you get to zoom after the fact. It's not really that the picture as a whole looks better. That's not really the point. I think they're aware of that, but you can't hate them for trying to take a knock there.
Sure, and exactly. They're making a big deal about this, and they're saying that their technology is better. So another piece of technology that they've added to this new iPhone 5S is an industry-first 64-bit A7 microchip in the iPhone 5S. Now, they spent a lot of time talking about how the computer industry has taken years to go from 32-bit processing to 64-bit processing, and they claim they did it in a day. Well, first of all, they spent a year engineering it, and second of all, they're not really done with the transition process just because they put a 64-bit chip in their phone. But what do you think, Chris? I mean, Samsung is going the way of putting 8 cores in their microchips in their phones, whereas Apple is going a different way. Which do you think is the better technology in the long run?
I mean, I'd have to think that sometime in the future, the Samsung devices will have 64-bit, 8-core chips. I have to think that in the future, the iPhone 5 will have 8 cores and be 64-bit. So I think they're going to converge at some point. But traditionally in the PC market, one of the things was the limitation in RAM for 32-bits. I think you could only have, 4 gig, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. 32-bit processors can only have 4 gigs max of allocated RAM.
So now, I'm not sure if that applies to these ARM chips in the same way, because it does? Okay. So
yeah.
In that case, you're looking at a device that can have a lot more RAM, and I don't think they're using it now, but you have to take that step at some point. And what's going to be interesting is that Apple has their phones, and they make the phones, they make the software, and so they can move more quickly with this because of their vertical integration. So they can roll out a 64-bit device in a way that Android just cannot, because Android has to be concerned about a lot more updates to existing devices. And the older hardware was always the problem in moving from 32-bit to 64-bit. So I think it's good to see them step up front here, and I'd have to imagine that in a few years, all of the Android devices are going to do the same thing.
Yeah, you're probably right. My question was, which one was the more important technology in the long run? I guess the long run is a misnomer if they're both going to converge.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess the question is, in the short run, which is more important? And it's a really hard question to answer. You'd have to take some pretty serious benchmarks. So I think they're both quite interesting, particularly in the application of 3D gaming and the like. You know, just the advancements in the chips enable developers to do so much more, and particularly in games. It'll be interesting to see what people can think up when they've got a little more room to play with in the device.
Yeah, so another technology that is going to be able to enable people to play with more metrics in the iPhone 5S is this M7 motion coprocessor that goes along with the A7 64-bit processor. The idea here is that it will have a separate processor that basically keeps track of the motion of the phone and, by extension, your motion. So they're going to be using this to always keep track of your acceleration. It's going to have the gyroscope and the compass, and then it'll also be attached to the GPS so that it'll know if, say, you're running or if you're in a car or if you're in a plane. And so it will be able to measure steps, measure heart rate, and then it'll know if you're driving, and then the phone can make intelligent adjustments based on that.
So did Apple just kill the smartwatch?
Well, they didn't come up with their own smartwatch, so maybe that's their plan.
Yeah, because these are the exact applications you see for a lot of the smartwatches, the health monitoring and that kind of thing. I mean, I realize, you know, maybe some people don't want to run or exercise with their phone, but I think they're trying to get some of that that body measurement goodness that a lot of the smartwatches have gone after. And remember, that was a tireless rumor before this event as well, is that Apple was working on a watch, and maybe they weren't. Maybe they were just working on internals for the iPhone.
Well, there are some other rumors that indicate that they may still be working on watches. But as far as accessories with the iPhone and whether they're trying to kill off those smartwatches or motion trackers or everything, Nike has been a big proponent of the smartwatches and, you know, the sensor that you put in your shoe, or you buy the shoes with the sensor built into them. And Nike has already jumped right on this new M7 coprocessor bandwagon and come out with their own app to take advantage of it. So Nike, which is their biggest motion tracker partner, seems to be okay with having all of this built into the phone. So I don't know. Maybe they will still have a watch. You know, there are other reasons to have it. But this motion tracker is definitely taking away a lot of those fitness apps that previously relied on third-party accessories.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good thing to see. So we're also getting iOS 7 with this device. Is there any? I know we've talked about iOS 7 a little bit in the past. Is there anything interesting that we have gleaned from their presentation here?
Yeah, so iOS 7 will be available to everyone back to the iPhone 4, the iPad 2, but only the most recent iPod Touch. We've covered pretty much all of the highlights here. iOS 7 in the car will be available at launch, which we weren't sure about. But the Apple Password Manager has been pulled from the most recent beta, and we're probably not going to expect that in the initial release. I suspect they're saving that for the release of OS X Mavericks. They talked a lot about iTunes Radio, which is going to be ready at launch, and it seems to work really well. It's just basically Pandora and Spotify built right into your iTunes app.
Right, and the last bit, they talked again at the event about their iWork suite. Is there anything exciting going on there?
Right, so they have been working on improving the iWork suite and adding a lot of sharing functionality, and specifically in relation to iWork and iLife for iOS only, right? You can get iLife on the Mac as well as iWork. You have to buy those separately, and their apps for the iPhone, that's iPhoto, iMovie, Numbers, Pages, and Keynote, used to cost $5 to $10 each on the App Store. Now they're going to be free with every new iOS device. So if you already have one, you're still going to have to pay for it in the App Store. But if you buy a new iPhone or iPad, you will be presented with an option to download them for free when you set it up.
Cool. That's a pretty good deal. There's a lot of software there that is pretty good. So definitely a good thing to get it for free, but only with new devices, I guess. So
yeah,
you still have to pay for it if you're coming back with an older device and getting it from the App Store.
Yeah, that's right. So it will not be refunding anybody who already bought it. And if you're not buying a new iOS device soon, you're going to have to pay for those individually anyway. So to just round up everything we talked about, the iPhone 5S and the 5C are going to go on sale on September 20th. That's the Friday after iOS 7 comes out for existing devices. The iPhone 5C only is going to be available for pre-order on September 13th. Now, if you know you're going to get the iPhone 5C, I would recommend doing that. Call your carrier and see if you can get them to waive your upgrade fee, which I did with my iPhone 5 last year.
Nice. All right, cool. Well, that's a pretty good summary right there. So why don't we turn on our afterburners?
Sure.
You ready? Get your seatbelt
on. Yeah, you go ahead and start. I'm buckling my seatbelt.
All right, sounds good. So Microsoft had previously mentioned that the Windows 8.1 update would, in fact, not be available early to developers, but that everybody would have to wait until October 18th. So this means that developers wouldn't be able to test their apps on the new Windows 8.1, and it means that you might get some buggy software as soon as that October 18th release date hit. So there was a large backlash, and they have changed their mind, so all of the developers are getting an early look at Windows 8.1 so that they can test their apps on it and that kind of thing. And that's definitely a win for the community, because they spoke out loudly, and Microsoft realized they had made a mistake and reversed the course.
Okay, cool. Well, the Google Play Store has just started selling an LTE version of the Nexus 7.
Neat.
It's 32 gigabytes on T-Mobile for $349, and that's without a contract, of course. I mention this because I recently talked to some people who temporarily were using their Nexus 7 as a phone. Their phone broke down, and they were using it full-time as a phone until they got a new phone. So now, with an LTE version, you could conceivably do it full-time.
So Samsung has Samsung and AT&T are releasing the Samsung Galaxy Note 3 for pre-order on AT&T. They say somewhere around, quote-unquote, October 1st for $300, you can put your hat in the ring for this device.
Cool, yeah. If you want a slightly smaller but still gigantic phone.
Yeah, ping pong paddle phone.
All right, well, a few more notes that are coming out of IFA, which finished up last week. We mentioned it during our show last week from the first half, but there are a few more announcements here. One is that Samsung is launching a 98-inch diagonal 4K OLED TV. So this is going to be ultra-high definition, 98 inches across, and there is no word yet on how much it's going to cost, but they're expecting that it's going to be somewhere between $5,000 and $8,000.
I miss the 21x9 TVs. They need to bring that back.
I think you could probably still find them anywhere. But some more news from Sony. They have gone and updated their PS Vita 2000. They made it slightly thinner and a lot lighter, and they made the battery last a lot longer, but otherwise it looks pretty similar. But the bigger announcement here is their PlayStation Vita TV, which is going to be an accessory for the PlayStation 4 that will serve as a multimedia streaming station, and from the looks of it, maybe a Blu-ray player? I'm not really sure what it does. It will, you know, the PlayStation 4 isn't even out yet, but this will be a multimedia component to that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with this thing, because the details are a little light here. So when we
and the PlayStation 3 is like already a pretty powerful multimedia player, so I don't know why they need this extra box, but they came out with it. And I guess when these actually hit the market, we'll find out what it is that they do.
Right.
Now, out of a different conference that is going on this week, IDF, Google and Intel teamed up for an announcement of a whole slew of new Chromebooks that will feature the latest Intel Haswell processors. So these are going to make them a little bit slimmer, a little bit lighter, much faster, and have a much better battery life, which is something you probably want in a Chromebook if you want a Chromebook. So I guess this would be a good time to buy a Chromebook.
Yeah, I got to imagine these web-only kind of laptops, like the Chromebooks, they'll be served well by having a more power-efficient chip, which is one of the big deals about the Haswell chip. So definitely good to see that.
Totally.
All right, and
well,
with
I think
that,
that's our last afterburner.
Indeed it is. Let's turn them off. You can undo your seatbelt. Sit
okay,
back.
I'm just going to leave it on. I'm a little worried about what's going to happen next.
Okay, well, you can sit back and make yourself an old-fashioned while we get into the end-user stories. So our first one of the week here is that, oddly enough, Nissan, the car manufacturer, is apparently working on and going to release a smartwatch of their own.
Right, last week we saw smartwatches from Qualcomm, of all companies, and we thought that was a shocker, as well as Samsung, who came out with their Galaxy Gear watch, which was pretty much everything but the kitchen sink that you could throw in a watch. And so it's even more surprising that we see this smartwatch from Nissan, which is designed to pair with all of their performance Nissan Nismo motorsport cars.
Yeah, it's pretty wacky, isn't it? You know, a car-specific watch, and they did show off an app for iOS that it could also talk to, but it seems pretty wacky.
Yeah, it's definitely meant to communicate primarily with your car.
Yeah.
It also, for some reason, can access Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and Instagram, and can monitor your heart rate, as well as giving road conditions, car maintenance conditions and specs, like your average speed, and giving you weather.
So I'm going to go ahead and call it right now. This is a watch that will never be released. So
you're thinking this is vaporware.
I'm thinking this is vaporware. Until I see a date and a price, I'll be very skeptical of this actually getting out into the consumer market. But that said, you know, we usually don't talk about vaporware, right? But this thing is just so cool looking. We had to share it.
Well, I mean, this is going to be a watch that is only available with their very high-end performance cars, which not a lot of people buy to begin with, and they want to keep it that way. So I think this is definitely going to be a product that they will have a physical version of at the Frankfurt Motor Show that's coming up. And they may very well offer it only with these cars, maybe as a premium. But, you know, people are willing to throw on a $500 add-on when they're buying these fancy
right.
cars that they wouldn't otherwise spend. So I think this is going to be a real product. Will you or I ever see one? It's highly unlikely.
Right, right. That's pretty good. But it just looks so awesome. You know,
it does.
In particular, you have to go into the show notes and click on our link through to Mashable and watch the video. It's like an epic movie trailer about this smartwatch, and it just seems awesome. And I want to see the movie now. I want to see the Nissan Nismo movie now.
Yeah, I don't know about the movie, but I definitely want the car so I can get the watch.
Yeah, maybe this thing will be in like a James Bond movie or something. I could see that.
All right, so we've got a gentleman's bet going. You say this is vaporware. I think it's hypothetically not vaporware.
Yeah, so we'll see what actually happens, and we'll actually, you know, I'm nearly sure we will never follow up on this. But if we see it in the news, we'll try to follow up on it.
I'm just gonna go out and buy a Nissan just to prove you wrong.
There you go. Yeah, you can go get a Nissan just to prove me wrong. Win the podcast.
If only it connected with their electric car, the Leaf.
Yeah, there you go, and then you could read out battery state and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now,
most
that would
electric
be even
cars
cooler.
These days, I think even the Nissan Leaf, they have smartphone apps that can give you a lot of metrics about the car and are often tied into its entertainment system, too.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. So anyway, let's get into our next story. We've got a good old Microsoft story here talking about Xbox Music. They're releasing the iOS and Android apps that interface with Xbox Music. And surprisingly, at least I was surprised by this, they're also releasing a free web app. So if you have a Xbox Music account, or a Microsoft account in this case, then you can go listen to Xbox Music. And it's most like Spotify, so you can be free on the web, at least for now. They're saying that you will get unlimited streaming on the web for 6 months, and then it's going to be limited streaming on the web, but there will be a free tier on the web. And then to get the smartphone applications, you have to pay a little bit. We've talked about this in the past. It's $9.99 a month, and to get the Google Play and the iOS version and the Windows Phone version, they're all $9.99 a month. So super cool to see a free option on the web. I was not expecting that, and I went to use this for a little bit, and it's pretty good. You know, you just search for music and you make playlists. There's no notion of a radio or anything like that. So it's kind of neat to just search for a song and actually play the song. And I've been used to the Pandora model for so long that it's almost a little strange to actually call out the songs in a playlist.
Yeah, I don't use Pandora for that reason. It bugs me not to be able to call out the songs. Generally, when I use one of these services, is because I want to hear a song that I haven't
right.
already paid for.
Right. So, yeah, this is free out on the web. You might as well go give it a try. It seems pretty nice. And the web application is really nice.
Well, okay, I'll check it out. But I probably won't be using this much, as I'm generally someone who is outside of the Microsoft ecosystem.
Right. But if you're even halfway into the Microsoft ecosystem, this looks like a pretty compelling option. we'll see. I wonder if they're going to roll out some free tier for the mobile applications. Because I think at $9.99 a month, that's a little bit killer. And I know most of the other apps are around the same price. But if they could have some notion of a limited free tier on mobile, I think that would kind of put them over the top for some people. But as it is, free on the web, you can't hate on that.
Nope, not at all. All right, you've got one more story for us here in the end user stories.
Right, so the this one is really interesting to me, and we've got another potential vaporware here, and the company is called Simple.tv, and they were a Best of CES award a couple years ago, and this product seems really interesting. You know, from the way they speak about it in all of the press material, it's like they're targeting something directly at me. So this device is supposedly going to be a DVR that DVRs over-the-air TV and potentially basic cable, basically the unencrypted cable channels, and that's pretty much what I use my media center for. So it's going to be a DVR for that stuff, as well as pausing live TV and all that kind of thing, and an over-the-top service provider. So, you know, they'll have Netflix and Hulu and all of that. And what's interesting is not that. In fact, we may have even talked about this when they were at CES. I bet you we did. But they've got a new partnership with Silicon Dust, who makes TV tuners. And it just kind of lends a little more credibility to them actually coming out with a device in production. And I would love to see this work, because I think they've got all the right ideas. And if they can translate that into a working hardware device, they've got a fantastic device that would apply to a lot of people, including myself.
Right. I agree. This does look really cool. And I was thinking about options for a future entertainment system for myself, and this is definitely right up near the top of the list. You mentioned basic cable, though, and I don't think it will be able to get unencrypted basic cable in most markets, just because that doesn't exist anymore.
That's true.
It may still, in some parts of the country or the world, on some providers, but for the most part, companies like Comcast and Time Warner have left unencrypted cable channels behind.
Yeah, and for the most part, the channels that are unencrypted are the ones you would get over the air anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And you get pretty good over the air.
Even those on cable are no longer unencrypted.
Right, right. And you get pretty good over the air. It's in 1080i. You know, the helicopter flies by, it screws everything up. But the amount of TV that is over the air is pretty much enough for me. And between over the air TV and services like Netflix, that's enough. There's enough content out there that that you potentially don't need anything else. And that said, you know, you're going to go through some inconveniences. You know, if you want to watch Breaking Bad, for example, you have to wait an extra long time for it to come out on Netflix. That's not something you can really do. So, you know, there's always a flip side to it. But I think this device, if it can deliver on its promises, which is questionable, will be a cord cutter favorite for years to come, if they can deliver.
I think they can absolutely deliver on their promises. It's just a question of whether they can survive the inevitable lawsuits from the cable companies.
Yeah. So we'll have to see what happens. But if this device comes out as it's envisioned, then this will be my next DVR box.
Yeah, might be mine as well.
Yeah, undoubtedly. It looks great. All right, well, let's get into our tip of the week. You've got one for us. What's going on here?
All right, this is a website that I discovered via Lifehacker, as usual, and it's called Just Delete Me. And I was looking for something like this last year, and I may have even shared a primitive version of this at some point during our show, but this one is really simple and yet really comprehensive. It's just a list of user-submitted methods by which you can delete your account from web services. And it's searchable. They organize everything by whether it's easy, difficult, or impossible. And in fact, there are plenty of websites out there where deleting your account from their servers is impossible. And I've come across a few of these myself. But it's really simple to at least find out whether it's possible and how hard it's going to be to delete your account from any particular web service. And if you find something that's not on there and you figure out how to do it, then you can add it.
Yeah, that's the most frustrating part, is when you go to a service and you say, okay, I'm done here, I want to delete my account and leave, and you go to delete your account and there's nothing there in the settings, and you just kind of wander around the settings for 10 minutes or whatever it is, and that's terribly frustrating. So if you can just remember to go here first, it'll just say impossible, and you'll say, oh, well, okay. So that's pretty nice, because I know I've gone to delete something and found out that it's impossible.
Yeah. So this one will at least make it easy for you to figure out whether it's possible or not. And the one I mentioned before is called Account Killer, and they are apparently now much more comprehensive, but not quite as easy to search.
Cool. So we've also got a app pick of the week. It's Coast by Opera for the iPad. And you've gotten to play around with this. What is this?
I have, yeah. So Opera announced months ago that they were going to switch to a WebKit development for iOS, which is the officially supported browser rendering engine.
And their desktop browser. Desktop browser is also WebKit now.
Okay, cool. So they finally, the fruits of their labor have trickled down onto the iPad with this new browser called Coast. And it is easy and fast and intuitive in a way that none of their previous iOS browsers have been. It's great. It's good enough that it replaces Chrome and Safari in a lot of my browsing uses on the iPad. I think it's awesome. And it's intuitive, and it helps you find things sometimes. It just has basically a list of icons that represent any sites that you want to bookmark, and they're organized by pages, and you can add and subtract pages and icons. And then it just gives you a search/address bar and really hides all the rest of the Chrome that you are used to seeing in your browsers. It's awesome. It's slick. It's got cool background images, and it was fast. I loved it in a way that I haven't loved Opera on any platform in a while.
You should take a look at their newest edition on the desktop. It's also gotten a lot better.
I didn't love it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think it's gotten a lot better from what it used to be. And
right. Well, with my desktop, I feel like I have enough real estate. What I really want is integration and smart link saving, and something that will not eat up a lot of memory when I open dozens of tabs. And so far for me, nothing beats Safari on the desktop.
Sure, I could see that. So you actually want the Chrome to come in when you have that amount of screen real estate.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, interesting. Well, yeah, so if you're an iPad kind of person, go have a look at this. It does, from what I can see, you know, not having used it and listening to you, it looks pretty cool. And it's free in the App Store, yes?
Yes, it's free. It's only for the iPad right now. We will let you know in the future if and when it comes to other iOS devices.
Well, speaking of Chrome getting out of the way, we've also got some things that are getting out of the way and going to space. What do we have here for our last story of the week?
Yeah, the founder of PayPal, Tesla, and SpaceX, Elon Musk, he can't get out of our kicker section here. This week he has posted a video which shows him manipulating rocket thruster designs on his computer using his hands in 3D space. So he is designing things by manipulating them with his hands on the computer, and then he can send that directly to a 3D printer. I mean, this is straight out of Iron Man the movie.
Right. Yeah, quite literally. So it's cool to see them kind of tinker with potential advancements in the development process, you know, the human to computer development process, where you can, I don't know if this is going to be better in the end or not, but it's good to see somebody tinker with it, because you've got all these you've got all these CAD programs that are very complicated to use, and the you know, typically engineers get trained in how to use that kind of software and they can use it very effectively, but it takes a long time to get into it and learn how to use it effectively and quickly. So I wonder if this can go one of two ways. It can either be a hindrance because the interface is awkward, or it could be a boon because the because it's more natural. And I'm not sure which pile this fits into.
Right, but it's an advance nonetheless. It's something that we've never seen before. And the human-to-computer interface is not usually enough to get into our kicker section. But this one happens to show human-to-computer to laser to rocket to space interface.
Nice. Yeah, so that's pretty amazing. I don't want to, you know, cast any FUD around this, but it's pretty cool looking. I wonder if this kind of interface will catch on or not. Time will tell.
I think it will catch on at SpaceX, but I'm not sure how many people are going to be designing 3D rocket blueprints at home.
Well, so you know what else I want to catch on is your Twitter handle. It should be lit on fire. How would people reach you on Twitter?
How would people light my Twitter handle on fire, Chris?
Yes. You can get very creative with this one.
No, I'm asking you to get creative. How would they light my Twitter handle on fire?
Okay, first, they would sit down at their computer and write a resume. And on that resume, they would have to detail how good they are at making parts for a rocket. They would have to go get a job at SpaceX and design parts for the next SpaceX launch. Then they would have to take their phone, look up your username, which is @TaylorPhone, and they would just pull up your profile and put it into the rocket and then send it into space for it to never return but burn up in the atmosphere.
Okay, we've lit the phone on fire. Now how do we light the Twitter handle on fire?
No, that's it. And then Twitter will delete your account after that, I'm pretty sure.
Ah, okay. Well, that makes sense then. Now, then they couldn't reach me, could they?
No, I guess not. You'd be up a creek, my man.
Yeah. Well, I'd still be on Vine.
Yeah, it'd still be on Vine. You can do @TaylorPhone on Vine. Less creatively, I am @ChrisHillBarnes. If you want to get it into touch with me, that's how you would do so. Just tweet at us. Let us know what you think of the show and the like.
Chris,
so,
I am going to light your Twitter handle on fire tonight.
Oh,
right,
okay.
After the show.
All right. So I'll be looking forward to see how you do that. I suggest you start with a resume.
Oh, I've got a resume, Chris.
All right.
It involves lighting Twitter handles on fire.
That's part of your resume. Yeah, nice. All right, well, let's get out of here for this week. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find more information, including the show notes with the Nissan Watch video over at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts. You can listen to Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, and the Movie Podcast. And the newest addition on the Digital Media Zone is Richard Gunther's new podcast, Home On. If you wanted to send us some feedback, you can do so. Our email is theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can ping us on Twitter. We are @theenduser. Join us in the chat room as we record the show live every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I am professional Twitter handle fire starter, Taylor Marr.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.